You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a Diversified Media Enterprises production. I'm Doug Cunningham. AFL-CIO President Rich Trumka says as political attacks on labor continue, solidarity and unity are vital, and that includes outreach from labor to progressive groups nationwide.
And you'll see us defending their issues as much as we would ask them to defend our issues. Because when we truly get to the point where it's not my issues and your issues, but our issues, then we all win. And that's where we're trying to get to. We're not there yet, but that's where we're trying to get to.
Trumka says without real unity and solidarity, the political attacks will pick off small pieces of labor and the progressive movement one by one.
Because for too long, quite frankly, we've allowed ourselves to be beat in echelon. They have a small group over here. They focus on the small group and they beat them while the rest of us sit on the sideline and say, gee, ain't it great that they're not after me? Sorry about them, but God, they ain't after me. Well, you get your turn in the barrel.
Trumka says labor is the most targeted by conservative right-wing political forces.
We have probably the biggest target on us, the American labor movement, because we are one of the last groups with enough mass. We're the last defense on the playing field with enough wherewithal to be a formidable defense. And so they come after us. They come after us in the states. They come after us at local governments. They come at us with the federal government.
A large protest rally is set in Los Angeles for Monday, May 1st. The May Day Coalition of Los Angeles is organizing and building for the massive May Day protest called Resist Los Angeles. Organizers include the Los Angeles County Labor Federation. The Federation says planning and coordination for the May 1st march and rally is full steam ahead. More than 60 organizations are in the May Day Coalition. They say the May Day protest is an act of resistance to the threats facing our democracy, civil institutions, and individual and collective rights, and to denounce the lack of compassion towards families and the most vulnerable in our society. SEIU United Service Workers West's Elizabeth Strader says that L.A. is going to be ground zero for May Day protests, and organizers are expecting a very large response.
Brought to you by Blue Cross Blue Shield National Labor Office, empowering working Americans with stable health coverage for over 50 years. The National Labor Office is committed to remaining the top choice for the 17 million union workers, retirees, and families they serve. Online at bcbs.com/NLO.
Workers Independent News is heard daily on The Rick Smith Show, 10 to noon Eastern Time at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to WFHB Bloomington at 91.3 FM, W251 AG Bloomington at 98.1 FM, W264 BP Nashville at 100.7 FM and W292 DD Ellisville at 106.3 FM. Community radio for South Central Indiana.
You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer-powered,
listener-supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, April 12, 2017. Protesters and police clashed outside a speech at Indiana University last night. More on that later in the show in today's WFHB Community Report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
The Monroe County Council has put plans for a new library branch in a holding pattern, citing concerns about annexation. Monroe County Public Library's Director Marilyn Wood addressed the council in its meeting last night, requesting a transfer of $900,000 of the library's own savings into a fund the library could draw on for renovation and expansion. The library's finance manager, Gary Littlier, said there would not be a tax increase as a result of the library's plans.
The library's long-term facility finance plan allows for a $1 million renovation of the Ellisville branch later this year, and a new branch in 2020 with a construction budget of about $6.6 million. There are no plans to request any tax increases above the normal growth quotient for the duration of this plan.
Littlier explained the library will pay off a general obligation bond in 2018, but will also renew the bond every 3 years to maintain its funding level. Littlier said the library considered the 2020 annexation when making its plans.
By then, we expect to have the funding in place for the new branch, and then in 2021 and beyond, cash from operations will support the branch operating costs, estimated at $500,000 to $600,000 per year.
Council members expressed their individual appreciation for the library. Council Chair Ryan Cobine called the library a shining star in the community. But each also said until the true financial impact of annexation is known, they could not confidently plan for the future. The city and the county are both examining the impact the city's annexation of thousands of acreage in the county will have on tax revenue. In what Wood called a conservative plan, the library included in its financial plan $600,000 in local income tax revenue from 2016. Councilmember Marty Hawk took issue with Littlier's projection while expressing concern about those households whose taxes would increase as a result of annexation.
I think it would be very concerning to people who understand that that revenue from the income tax that you would count on another $600,000 in another 3 or 4 years, because they've already cut it down from the 50 to the 15%. And because of the increase in the levy by the city, and I'm not just counting their debt levy, I'm talking about they're going to have a large increase in operating levy, which will then in year 2, 3, and 4, and it'll be worse in not year 2, it'll be worse in 3 and 4, because by then they'll have this higher levy, because allowable levy for income tax goes over a 2-year period. They do a 1-year look back and so forth. So until all of that happens, we really do not know. Wish we did. We all wish we knew what the effect's going to be on the library, on the townships, on the fire departments, on county government.
Hawk asked that the proposal be postponed until the true financial impact of annexation is known. Councilmember Cheryl Munson agreed, saying she would like a fuller discussion with Wood on the plan and the public to have more information about the future financial impact of annexation. Munson added that she loves the library.
It is one of the most outstanding county libraries in the whole country, and we're very proud of it, and we look forward to its expansion to the southwest part of the county and to improve facilities in Ellisville, and I think we are all your supporters.
The council will reconsider the library's proposal at their meeting July 11.
Revisions to a town ordinance governing the floodplain overlay district could prove expensive for some Ellisville residents. Planning Director Kevin Talati told the town council this week the revisions are necessary in order to remain in compliance with FEMA's National Flood Insurance Program. The revisions are meant to minimize the effects of flooding as well as prevent future flooding. Talati said the changes mainly apply to new construction and tighten the code in some areas while loosening it in others.
The less restrictive are for accessory structures, in that they don't have to be brought up to the full code for something in a flood zone. So if you already have a house that's in a floodplain, you're not going to have to go through a bunch of hoops to put a shed in, which before we didn't have that. So it makes a lot of sense that way. But it is a little more stringent in how things are built within a floodway, with the idea that the less that's actually built within a floodway or floodplain, the less impact it'll have on flooding in the future, the less damage there'll be.
Talati said the number of inspections will go up as a result of the revisions, but that means his department can catch violations early when they're easier to correct. During public comment, Autumn Ridge resident Bill Schneiders said his property is 24 feet above Branch Creek, but he can't confirm by looking at FEMA maps whether his property is considered to lie within a floodplain. Schneider asked Talati how he can prove he's not in FEMA's floodplain without hiring a surveyor.
What you need is a letter of map amendment. I thought they had to open up an easier way of doing it. I haven't been able to find it, so I'm not sure that there is. But that's really the only way to get out of the insurance requirement.
Schneider said several of his neighbors are facing the same issue, and they all would like to avoid the expense of hiring a surveyor. Council members Kevin Farris relayed his own experience establishing whether his property lay within a floodplain.
I'm on that same creek, Branch Creek, and it's a tributary of Jack's Defeat, and in the last 15 years, FEMA has changed the flood map twice. They broadened it twice. So I had to hire an engineer, Smith Newbecker, and they had to do, there's no 100-year floodplain on that creek. So my portion of it, they had to create a 100-year flood mark and get FEMA to sign off on it that I was out of the, even though technically they had put me in the flood map, based on what Smith Newbecker came up with, they agreed that I wasn't in the floodplain, and now I'm grandfathered out. They can never put me back in it. They can change the flood map, but they can't put me back in it.
Farris said the effort cost him $4,000.
A City of Bloomington press release announced the results of the city's monthly water testing program. March 2017's level of disinfectant byproducts in eight different area testing sites measured well below February results and far below average limits. Utilities Director Vic Kelson explained that results often vary, as temperatures do, because cold weather necessitates more chlorine in treatment basins to prevent the formation of DBPs. Mayor John Hamilton assures the community the city will continue to monitor water quality carefully. Quote, CBU staff is constantly working to provide the highest possible water quality for our customers in the county in order to make timely water treatment adjustments based on environmental influences, unquote. All water quality tests results are available online at data.bloomington.in.gov under utilities.
A bill to create a new state program to house the homeless, Senate Bill 242, has now passed both the Indiana Senate and House of Representatives. The Housing First model prioritizes placing chronically homeless into permanent housing before addressing other issues, such as unemployment or drug addiction. According to the U.S. Interagency Council on Homelessness, Indiana's chronically homeless costs taxpayers between $30,000 and $50,000 per person each year in emergency, police, and hospital services. The Times of Northwest Indiana reported that the proposed budget for the program would provide $1 million a year in funding and would be based on a similar program in Utah that reduced chronic homelessness by 91%. The bill will now go to Governor Eric Holcomb for final consideration. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Scott Weddle. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service, available at smithvillesecurity.com.
A much-criticized speech at Indiana University last night became the site of a showdown between police and protesters. WFHB News Director Joe Crawford has more on that story in today's WFHB Community Report.
Toward the beginning of his speech last night, Charles Murray thanked police and private security who worked the event. There were, in Murray's words, enough security to take out a small army. In fact, the Indiana University Police Department estimates there were 70 police officers from three different agencies working the event, in addition to more personnel from a private security firm, ESG Security. In total, security easily outnumbered the roughly 60 people who attended the speech by Murray, who is described by the Southern Poverty Law Center as a white nationalist. Police and ESG personnel were stationed at every entrance to Franklin Hall, where the event was taking place. They checked for tickets and searched the belongings of each person who entered the event. Officers were stationed in the front of the building, an area that was barricaded off to prohibit protesters from coming near the main entrance. Others were positioned on top of a nearby building, looking down on the scene. And inside, there were officers standing throughout the perimeter of President's Hall, the room in which Murray spoke and took questions for about an hour. Many protesters, including IU student T. Lawrence, took issue with the police presence.
I really don't care for their presence at all. They really don't need to be here. Like, no one's gonna put their hands on this man. We don't care enough. Like, he's not worth us being in jail. But we do need to get a point across that he doesn't belong here and we don't want him here.
Lawrence was one of a few hundred people who gathered outside Franklin Hall to protest the event. Many held signs with messages including "No platform for racists at IU" and "Freedom of speech is not freedom from dissent." Murray is criticized particularly for his 1994 book, The Bell Curve, in which he attempts to explain social inequality through genetics. In the words of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Murray uses, quote, "racist pseudoscience and misleading statistics to argue that social inequality is caused by the genetic inferiority of the Black and Latino communities, women, and the poor," unquote. Speaking to a group of protesters before the event, graduate student Anushka Sen referred to the large security presence in explaining why she advocated a boycott of the speech.
Murray being invited to talk is not the same as discussing controversial ideas. It is inviting the very same man who came up with those ideas, who was invited. He had the security of the university space, of the goodwill of being a guest of the university. And it is not a space where people will feel encouraged to challenge him on his viewpoints. So it's not like a classroom situation where we take up his opinions and discuss them in a light where everybody has that freedom. It is bringing in a person who has all that weight of security behind him, a weight that is actually literally visible in front of us right now.
Police and security personnel stood mostly silent, rarely interacting with protesters, as the speech began inside at around 6 p.m. Outside, protesters played music, chanted, and danced on the side of Franklin Hall. Their words, including the simple, profane, three-word chant, "F. Charles Murray," were audible inside President's Hall as Murray spoke. Protesters gave varying reasons for attending the rally outside the event. Alyssa Beauchamp said she was happy to be part of a resistance based in, as she said, joy, community, and solidarity.
I think that Charles Murray has come to a place of higher learning, and his scholarship has been pretty debunked a few times now. Things like the bell curve, I understand that he's written a new book, but I think it's pretty hard to trust someone in their future scholarship if you know their past. As a woman of color, I felt it was my duty to come here and to at least show some form of resistance. I think that when ideas like Murray's are met without resistance, they think that they're applicable and that everyone loves them. You have the right to come here and say whatever it is that you want, but this is also my community. You don't live here. You don't go to school here. And I'm here to show up for the people who you essentially marginalize through your writing, who you claim are less intelligent.
As the time approached 7 o'clock when Murray was scheduled to be finished speaking, protesters spread out around the building, with groups at each exit. Some said they wanted a brief chance to speak with Murray. Many of the protesters congregated in an area just north of Franklin Hall, where several cars were parked, including some police cars. When police tried to move those cars, several people sat down in their path, insisting they wanted to talk with Murray before they would clear the path. Officers threatened to arrest the group, which started as a few people but grew to dozens within minutes. Some officers told the group that Murray had already left the building. It turned out that, in fact, Murray had not left the building. Just a few moments later, he emerged from the other side of the building where other protesters were waiting. Murray got into a car and left without incident, but as he did so, police detained a woman they said was blocking a car's path. not the car Murray was in, they say a different car. Officers quickly took the woman into Franklin Hall, pursued by a mass of protesters who quickly demanded her release.
You garbage! F*** you!
Protesters rattled and then moved the metal barricades erected earlier that day by police, moving closer to Franklin Hall. In their way was a line of police who stood arm to arm. The group continued to chant for more than 20 minutes, gradually moving closer to police, who eventually backed up closer to the building. The protesters began using the detained woman's name, Stella. The group demanding Stella's release continued to grow as the minutes passed, and eventually it was announced that she had been released, leaving out of a different exit at Franklin Hall. But that did not stop the protest at the south doors of the building, as police continued to stand in line blocking the door, and many protesters took the opportunity to criticize police for going to such great lengths to protect a white nationalist speaker.
You're protecting a white supremacist! Wake the f- They are white supremacists!
Yeah. You know, historically, just saying, I was just doing my job isn't a very good defense.
Yeah!
Police stayed mostly silent and later entered Franklin Hall, where they locked the doors. For WFHB, I'm Joe Crawford.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Well, April 7th has come and gone, and it didn't happen. In case you missed it, a mysterious online bunch calling themselves the Turkish Crime Family recently claimed they had hacked into millions of iPhone accounts out there in the cloud and were going to reset the accounts and scramble communications for 300 million people on April 7th, unless Apple coughed up a massive ransom payment. Apple checked and announced that they had not been hacked, but the story spread widely in cyber media and lots of people were waiting with digitally bated breath. But I can't find any reports of any such attacks or problems. The whole thing seems to have been a scam. Now, however, other fraudsters are piggybacking on the story by emailing or phone calling potential suckers claiming to be from Apple support, saying, "Your iCloud account has been hacked," and asking for your personal data, passwords, and everything to verify your identity and fix the problem. Don't believe it. Apple ain't doing it, and any such email or phone call is bogus. And it was confusing in cyber circles because the anonymous group of hackers always picks April 7th to unload a cyber attack of some sort on Israel. That didn't make a lot of noise either. Israeli defense forces are just as heavy duty out in cyberspace as they are here in the world of April showers and May flowers. Look, you need to just face it. When you go online, you're entering a war zone. Your privacy is at risk. Your identity is at risk. You could lose your credit rating and even the money in your bank account. But it's not like there's nothing you can do about it. There have been a lot of warnings and urgent recommendations flying around just in the last week or two. Do some searching and check out the details. Worried about privacy and wondering who might be keeping track of everything you do online? There are anti-tracking programs like Privacy Badger and Disconnect, which can keep advertisers in the dark. Or you might want to get on a VPN, a virtual private network, like Algo, A-L-G-O, or Cloak. But read the fine print before you sign up. Some VPNs actually track you themselves. Worried about security? You already use different passwords for every account, don't you? And good strong ones? If you're drowning in passwords, consider a password manager like LastPass. You can encrypt your communications from end to end these days with programs like Signal. The main thing to remember is, it's up to you. If you have a smartphone or if you ever use the internet, you have to pay attention to the threats out there and the defenses available. It keeps changing. It keeps getting worse. And the worst thing you can do is nothing. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at WFHB.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@WFHB.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Kathy Norton, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Joe Crawford.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program, recognized among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@WFHB.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@WFHB.org.
This week on Eco Report.
There are several communities that are immediately on the coast. The islands that their communities are on are actually eroding at a relatively significant rate.
We speak with Tazay Jones, a coastal ecologist for the National Park Service. That's this week on Eco Report, your award-winning local independent news source for coverage of environmental and ecological issues. Eco Report, Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. on Community Radio WFHB.